Well, good evening, friends. I am actually attempting to continue a little bit with our discipleship in the New Age, Section 1, or Volume 1, Section 1, video commentary. We have been discussing the devastating racket in which the modern Western disciple must perforce live. And there have been some pretty demanding requirements. Let's see, what has he said here? Peace, peace in turmoil. Power in fatigue, I could use that right now. Persistence in spite of bad health. And also understanding in spite of the clamor of Western life. And our cooperation with hierarchy and the wisdom we must be attained, he says, in the very midst of intellectual turmoil. I'll add that the intellectual questioning of the Western disciple is so intense, but that doesn't mean that wisdom comes of it. Maybe simply illusion and confusion. Wisdom must be attained, he says, in the very midst of intellectual turmoil and the work of cooperation with the hierarchy on the inner side of life must proceed amidst the devastating racket of modern life in the great cities. And some of you have lived in the great cities. I spent quite a few years going to work at the Arcane School or Lucis Trust in New York City, walking across Manhattan almost every day from the West Side to the East Side. And I can assure you that it is a devastating racket, and probably because I was listening so much to the recording of the books by DK, I heard even less of it. But nonetheless, it was potentially very distracting if I had not been so very interested in the subject. And I suppose I was taking my life in my hands because I was completely concentrated upon learning and absorbing while taxis were running about and making left turns and right turns. And you had to be alert. And but I found Master DK's work, what shall I say, more compelling. Well, he says, such is your problem. I'll add, you disciples in the West, such is your problem. And such is my problem as I seek to aid you. It's not like Master DK chose an easy task. He knows what the modern true aspirant and true disciple are up against, and yet so important is it that the ageless wisdom gain a true foothold in the consciousness, a true place in the consciousness of many millions, that of course he has to attempt to impress us with the wisdom, regardless of the deterrent forces. But then he did say, didn't he, a little while up there, that he's counting on us to be undeterred by aught that may arise in the personal life, and it will arise, you can be sure. We will be tested over and over again. So that was really the end of program four, and we're beginning program five. As I say, this is the 4th of July, and that rather lengthy abbreviation, DINAV1S1VC, stands for Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Video Commentary. So he's going on with the issue of what it means to work with disciples, whether probationary or accepted. And after a while, his disciples became accepted disciples. That was the kind of relationship he developed with them. So he's being very practical here because energy is involved. And he says, for me, he's adding additional problems in addition to the racket of devastating racket. Notice the word deva is in that word, devastating, devastating. For me, he says, there is also the problem of excessive expenditure of force. As I attempt to reach each of you and to study each of you at certain intervals. Now, I suppose, according to the law of economy, it's only allowed to expend so much force, depending on what the objective may be and the possibility of success. But he talks of excessive expenditure. So he's really putting himself out. Well, that's a slang phrase. I won't say he's exhausting himself, but he has to be wary of too much energy spent. There is the work at long range, thousands of miles, right? Of reading your mind. Well, I'll say he just says that casually. He does that. We cannot yet do that, but we can learn the sensitivity of those that are naturally telepathic, and he assures us in various places that everybody is naturally telepathic. We just get in our own way. So repeating here what he says, there is the work at long range of reading your minds, of seeing your light. And let me say that the scholars are graded by the intensity of their light. And going on, and of vitalizing your auras. Well, he's far away, so it seems. I don't know the demands on the telepath if they are far away or closer, but he seems to suggest that this is a pretty a heavy responsibility, a pretty weighty task. I'll read that again because I think it's impressive. There is the work at long range of reading your minds, of seeing your light, and of vitalizing your auras. Well, this is the kind of teaching that he has to do, and he does study his students, and maybe he studies some of us too. It's difficult to know exactly what he is doing right now, but certainly I would guess that preparing for the third, the distribution of the third dispensation of this bridging series of treatises would be part of what is being prepared at this time. Okay, he goes on. This has not hitherto been the problem of the Eastern teachers, except in very rare cases. Perhaps I may say that the Eastern teachers were largely confined to dealing with chelas more or less in their own vicinity and did not have to span such great distances. So let's say that an added burden is placed upon Master DK to carry out his part in the mission of bringing occultism to the West with all the obstructions and inhibitions, and let's say in many ways the naivete of those who are in the West, and but that will not last forever. As a matter of fact, the two rays, 2 and 4, which are so important when it comes to humanity, and humanity's eventual ray combination, are the same rays as rule the Occident. So it's only to be expected that the great teaching must move towards the West, which does not mean it no longer has great repositories in the East. So he's taken on an added burden, let us say. Then going on, he says, those who are now working in the modern world under the masters of the wisdom have undergone a preliminary tuning up process and a training in receptivity during an earlier incarnation or incarnations. Let's ask how many? 1, 2, in a monastery, in a convent, in some sort of circumstance that is closer to retreat into quietude than is possible for the disciple who now goes forth into the outer world with the inner message. We're on page 7 now. He says, "Forget not, therefore, that I also have a problem which I am willing to undertake for the sake of a needy world. And as my contribution to hastening the coming of the new and more fruitful era." Let us, and then, indeed, he is saying, let's help each other. He says, "Let us therefore facilitate each other's efforts." One of the themes that rings loud and clear through his writing is that we, as aspirants and disciples, fail to put ourselves in the position that our teachers face when they attempt to help us. And that includes the Christ. We are not inclined to think of their problem. We think mostly in terms of our own problem, which is only one part of the story. So he's being very realistic here and saying, look, it takes a lot of energy to get through to you, especially under modern circumstances, and because you are so individualistic and so self-concerned, and you have your eyes on your own personality far too much, which inhibits my efforts. I'm pretending here to be the teacher, which inhibits my efforts to get through to you. So there is a reciprocity which is demanded. So indeed, as he says, let us therefore facilitate each other's efforts. They have their own methods, the great teachers. What would we do? We would, well, pause for a moment. How do you think you could help facilitate the efforts of the sincere, earnest teacher who wants to reach you? And I would say, you know, by holding a certain point of tension, which we know is required for receptivity, and not allow our points of extension to be spread all over our personality, but to really hold our mind steady in the light and gather up all of the non-essential interests which seem to preoccupy us. The teachers they work with the soul, and they work in ways which are beyond our comprehension. And so we have to somehow withdraw, abstract, and begin to identify more and more as a soul. And what would that be like? It's certainly a considerable a change of state, I would say. It sounds very simple, but functioning as a soul in the world is perhaps more rare than we might suspect. Now, you know, I'm not highlighting too much or coloring things in. I'm just letting you know when I make comments, and then when it is DK as the teacher and his texts or text that is proceeding. So going on, he's realistic. I promise no quick results. These are days when the lure of a specious instant enlightenment attracts many who don't want to do the work. But he is realistic with us. There's a lot of labor, I would say, that goes into preparing ourselves to really achieve results. He goes on, I undertake to provide no spectacular unfoldments, which, let me say, might be a lure to many who have an unrealistic idea about the methods of the spiritual path and of rising, climbing the ladder of attainment rapidly. And they have to be careful, of course, as Master Hilarion tells us, because if you put a muddy foot on the electric ladder, you will be frozen in place. So the purification is required. DK goes on, the results rest entirely with you. So wisely, then, at the beginning, he places the responsibility upon us, so we don't wait in some passive manner for the all-powerful teacher to do something to us, or the initiator to do something to us which will suddenly raise us to the heights of spirituality. Really, that attitude is glamorous. So, if I can say, you know, just keep that one in mind. I'm not being very colorful here, or I'm not emphasizing words except as I speak them, hoping that that will facilitate the flow of this work. The results, okay. DK says then, they depend upon your patience. How many of us have that? Your exactness in detail. And let me say, DK has written in detail. Then the discipline which you are willing to impose upon your lives, and your self-forgetfulness. So repeating, because it's important, the results, and not necessarily spectacular unfoldments, they depend upon your patience, your exactness in detail. I would say we cannot be careless in following the instructions, otherwise we're liable to have destruction. Your exactness in detail, the discipline which you are willing to impose upon your lives, and your self-forgetfulness. Well, these are words easily spoken, but can they be put into effect? Are we patient? Do we follow instruction regarding or paying attention with exactitude to the details offered? Are we disciplining ourselves in all levels of our personality? And are we capable of self-forgetfulness, let's call it in the lower sense? From another point of view, I would say we have to have capital S-E-L-F, self-remembrance, in order to be self-forgetful. In other words, the higher self, with which we begin to have some experience, must intensify its vibration so that we can forget the little self, the personality. Now, in the coming sentence, he uses the word beg, and he sometimes does that. It's a sign of the importance of what he's saying and the sincere hope that we will avail ourselves of the offered opportunities. So he says, "May I beg of you to leave results alone and to work without attachment, for you know not with exactitude what are my goals for you." We may know, I'll say something, we may know the general goal, but we don't know what from the master's side is being directed towards us. And if we follow those directives, the goals that the master is setting for us will be eventually achieved. So, repeating this, may I beg of you to leave results alone and to work without attachment, for you know not with exactitude what are my goals for you. Then further, may I beg you to desist from that constant self-analysis, which is such an outstanding characteristic of the introspective, yet ambitious Oriental mystic. Apparently, it's not very constructive, and it is common and it cloaks a kind of personal spiritual ambition. Then comes an ellipse. So there's been an extraction here. DK goes on. What, therefore, is the position I take? That I, one of a great group of disciples who, from the humblest aspirant up to the highest member of the hierarchy, link humanity with the spiritual kingdom. He calls himself a disciple. At this point, we don't know necessarily that he is a master of the wisdom, and we certainly don't know at the point when this is being written, or at least it was not common knowledge, that he was Master Jawal Kul, and, you know, other names for him exist as well. So repeating, what therefore is the position I take? That I, one of a great group of disciples who, from the humblest aspirant up to the highest member of the hierarchy, which would be, well, perhaps we can say it is the Christ. It depends on how far we take the idea of hierarchy. But from the humblest aspirant up to the highest member of the hierarchy, link humanity with the spiritual kingdom. That I, he says, can teach you the ancient rules and give suggestion to you so you may travel more rapidly along the path and arrive at greater usefulness to your fellow men. Notice how utilitarian it is. It's not about so how you can be spiritually exalted or any of those lures, how you may achieve spectacular unfoldments. It's not about you. It's about your usefulness to your fellow man. There is, he goes on to say, let's see if I can get this correct. Yeah. There is not the slightest suggestion of authoritative pronouncement by a member of the hierarchy who must be obeyed and whose word is infallible. Well, maybe this is a little bit different way than Master Moria works. He seems to be somewhat more demanding regarding instant obedience. But in any case, Master DK's method shuns the authoritative pronouncements that must be obeyed immediately and whose word is infallible. He does not claim infallibility. I mean, of course, I don't know how that got attached to the Pope, who is simply a reflection of, let's say, St. Peter, and the leader of the Christian Church. Somehow infallibility adhered to the reputation of the Pope. But every Pope really knows, unless terribly deluded, that he is far, far from infallible. So D.K. goes on and says, let this be remembered. Otherwise, work will not be possible. Elements of danger may enter in, and the present effort come to naught. So I'll say that D.K. foresaw the risks of working with those who are not yet of the true initiate consciousness. And the whole thing might be an abortive experiment. So far, that does not seem to be the case, even though the groups did not achieve the heights of group cooperation and group love and group illumination for which he hoped. He goes on, my anonymity has always been preserved and will continue to be so, though members of this group of disciples know me, certain members anyway, know me for whom, for who I am. And I suppose, you know, obviously Alice Bailey did, and probably Foster Bailey, and maybe certain of the higher initiate disciples. And there was a whole issue around anonymity. At some point, Alice Bailey created a document, and from that document, there was a kind of signature from Master Joao Kuhl. She did that by accident, but it, so to speak, in slang, it blew his cover. Yet he used it as a teaching experience, a learning experience. He said, I will be observing how each of you reacts to this new piece of information regarding my identity. It is a test for you. Now, that happened later as the teaching proceeded and as the years went by. So some of the members knew Master D.K. for who he was, but most probably not. And certainly those who were not involved in the inner teaching could only speculate. And D.K. goes on here and says, you know me as a teacher. Well, that's obvious. As a Tibetan disciple, and as an initiate of a certain degree, at least he claims initiate status here, but goes on to say, what degree being of no importance to you at all? Now, we know now that when writing these, Master D.K. was a master, but he didn't want his students to necessarily celebrate that fact and consider that because he was a master, everything he said was authoritative and to be obeyed without question. So repeating, you know me as a teacher, as a Tibetan disciple, and as an initiate of a certain degree, what degree being of no importance to you at all? There was a problem there. Alice Bailey and Madame Rorick, Helena Rorick, were friends, they were, but something happened over the identity of the Tibetan, and Madame Rorick began to imagine things that were not true and passed them on to her students as if somehow this Tibetan was a nefarious figure. Well, in Tibet, there are those practitioners of the darker type of magic and veering towards the left-hand path. And in the minds of some, her judgment, really erroneous judgment, has remained an active consideration and has caused a split between the Agni Yoga groups and the Alice Bailey groups. I myself experienced this very thing. I didn't let it get me down. I, you know, made friends, befriended the people who ran the Rorick Museum in New York, and I attended every couple of weeks the discussion meetings. But I did have some run-ins with the old guard, who felt you have to choose one way or another. And it was an interesting experience to see how locked in some of the old guard was to the things, the rather pejorative things which Madame Rorick had said about the Tibetan. All too bad, really, but bound to disappear in time, because in fact, the Tibetan works in very close cooperation with Master Moria and with Master Kutumi, but these people, being fed this information by Madame Rorick, were of no inclination to deviate from it. And so they, what can I say, held the schism. Okay, so DK goes on. It is the teaching that I shall give you which will matter. And may I say that the further we go in our studies, we realize this to be the case. And the emphasis upon personalities and upon individualism, such things fade away, whether the individualism of others or our own. It is the teaching that I give you which will matter. And I will say what a gift it is to all of us. He goes on, I am an initiate into the mysteries of being. Now, right away, that's a big hint. Because it certainly means he is above the third degree when the monad begins to make its presence more consciously felt. And as we move towards the fourth and the fifth degree, the quality of isolated unity, which is realized in the monad, takes over the consciousness of the disciple. So he's actually telling us that he is a true initiate, and probably quite a high initiate, because we study many things, how to illuminate, how to love, but how to be, this will to be, this is a very high state. So DK says, that statement in itself conveys information to those who know. So he challenges the reader, do you really know what it means to be initiate into the mysteries of being? It's a state of identification where one, how it impresses me, is where one identifies as being. Now, I think we identify with many things which are rather myopic and are false identities. But are we capable of identifying as the being which underlies and pervades, let's say, all things in this universe and any future or past universe? So that statement, he says, in itself conveys information to those who know. And in the Aquarian age, we must become the knower. We are transiting out of that 2,000-year period where we were the believer. And yet, in a larger cycle, somewhere like 21,000 years on the sixth ray, still remain as part of a sub-cycle of the fourth ray. You see, the whole question of cycles gets pretty intricate, and we just know a little bit of the ABCs of it. We know the kind of, well, we know, we accept from Master DK the kind of cyclic duration associated with each ray. The first ray based on one, the second ray based on five, the third ray based on nine. And perhaps, as some have speculated, the fourth ray based on 25 or 2.5 or any one of the multiples, and the fifth ray based on 35 or 3.5 or any one of the higher multiples. The sixth ray based on the number not only 15, but 150, 1500, and so forth and on. And the seventh ray coming back to cycles based on the 770, 700, 7000. And an initiate into the mysteries of being would possess that kind of, we call it all knowledge, that is found on the third level of the atmic plane. Obviously, Master DK, we can realize, has that kind of knowledge and imparts it to us through hints, a little bit at a time, and not in any immediately outlined didactic form. Okay, mysteries of being. He goes on, you know also that I am in a human body and am a resident of northern India. Maybe at that time, not Tibet per se. And that suffices, let that suffice, he says, and let not curiosity blind you to the teaching, because let me say that curiosity might lead off to the investigation of many secondary things, which would prevent us from a better type of assimilation of the teaching. But it is interesting, there's quite a difference between being merely curious and being a true student of the wisdom. I'm just trying to see how far I will go here. There's a lot to be said, and DK has said a lot. So we'll just patiently work our way through, gathering impression as we go, gathering inspiration as we go, and somehow learning the true science of the initiates. We stand together, he says, in spiritual enterprise. So I'll say that DK links himself in that way with his students. And says, you know, I'm helping you. Please be aware of my problem. You can help me. And together, there is a goal of this cooperative union. We stand together, excuse me, in spiritual enterprise. All of you have voluntarily and without pressure stated your willingness to go forward into a more intensive spiritual life. Well, I'll say that at the beginning, of course, everybody wants that. But they, for the most part, do not fathom the tests and the rigors involved. If you've been with this teaching for a long time, you realize that it's not that it gets easier, it gets more demanding of us, actually. But anyway, it's a great objective, an inspiring objective for students to think ahead of a more intensive spiritual life. This, he says, this you must do in the freedom of your own souls and through the power of your own intellects. So again, he's saying, I will not coerce you. I will make suggestions. I will not demand of you external obedience. If I demand anything, it will be occult obedience to your own soul. So he's leaving them in freedom. And I don't know if there were those who rejected his invitation. It would seem a foolish thing to do. Maybe there were. But anyway, he ended up with some 50 or slightly more chelas or disciples, for whom he did have plans, which plans were interrupted by the onset of the second phase of the Great War. You will, he says, you will follow such instructions as seem to you reasonable and right, but when you do choose to follow them, you will attempt to fulfill the requirements with exactitude. We can say in this respect that Master DK is an exacting teacher, and he demands of us a real caution, a carefulness in the reading of what he has imparted and in the execution of what he suggests. Now, obviously, as time went on, many of the chosen disciples did not follow his requirements with exactitude, and they faded back. What did they lack? Patience, trust. They lacked the ability to take their eyes off their personal self. So here, Master DK is expressing the ideal. Going on, he says, you will analyze and question the requirements which from time to time come forth from me, and you will accept no belief in their verbal inspiration. In other words, don't get hung up on words from me alone. It is the experience which counts. Master DK is forever fighting with the inelasticity of the English language. And he says that he cannot embody what he wants to impress us with, given the limitations of language. So everybody, his chelas, have to prove the value, the validity of his suggestions within themselves, rather than simply say, ah, the master said it, it must be true, and then refusing to think further. So DK goes on, language ever handicaps and limits. Many of us deal in the realm of words, and somehow we think that that might be enough, but it never is. Even the words of a master, which have a special type of magnetism, as DK tells us, when people try to water down his words, at least they are the magnetic words of a master. And he wants people, his students, to have the trust, to have the confidence to present his words as he presented them, rather than have some helpful disciple come along and say, oh, people will never understand that. We have to simplify this. And then in that simplification, loses its magnetic power. He goes on to say, you will also be guided in your work by health and circumstances, and you will ever remember that masters are made through the achieving of mastery and not through obedience to any person. So let's say he is calling for the mastery of circumstance, and it takes us to the Buddha, to the Buddha's last sermon, where he invokes very strenuously the idea of self-reliance. He's kind of, at this point, telling his students how they will proceed if they are wise, how they are likely to proceed. Masters are made through achieving mastery and not from obedience to any person. If a teacher is always demanding obedience, we fall into the Busiris complex in the labors of Hercules in Gemini, the false teacher, who still himself has not rid himself of personal ambition. DK goes on to say, you will bear in mind that I, your teacher, am not constantly aware of your physical condition or daily doings. Let me say, this is a sentence that helps to bring about decentralization in the chela. He goes on, I concern not myself with the affairs of the personality, and those misguided aspirants who claim that the masters are forever telling them what to do and are guiding them in their personal affairs are still far from the grade of accepted discipleship. There's some amusing stories about this, and some people who believe the master always has his eye upon them even might go so far as to consult Sanat Kumara as to what is permissible to eat for lunch. this is Sanat says it's okay. I mean, but of course, as we come closer to the true phase of accepted discipleship, some of those rather childish, imaginative interactions are going to fade away. I'll repeat. He ended up, of course, having to deal with some personality issues on the etheric, physical, emotional, and mental levels. He even told one disciple, sometimes you treat the body too well, and sometimes you treat it too harshly. And then, of course, there were all these emotional issues, which were the causes of glamour, which had to be addressed. And for some, there were mental obstructions. He did finally, at least it's my impression, have to concern himself with some personality issues. And maybe in the beginning, he thought he might not have to do that. Going on with what he says, you will remember that the light will shine into a mind that is self-controlled and free from the mental dominance of another mind. So let me say that the old devotional ideal that whatever X, Y, or Z says must be true, and I must follow it without question, and even without understanding, if I may say, that has no place in the new discipleship. So the light will shine into our minds if we are the correct controller of the mind, held steady, linked with the light of the soul, and not simply that we follow orders. We can see in a number of the religions of the world that they expect you to do what the priest or the officiant or the intermediary tells you to do. And that is no type of real individuality. It robs the thinker of their individuality, which is important to sustain, because everyone has a certain gift to give It's all part of the great divine will for the many to give their gifts. So he goes on to say, with these provisos clearly understood, and let me say, they are for many quite demanding, let us pass to the enunciation of certain principles and to a consideration of what it may be possible to do. Now, I did one program a little earlier today, a short program, and this also I have in mind, this is page 8, I have in mind that this also will be a shorter program. And I'll just copy that and page 6, 7, and up to page 8. So he's going to end, when we begin next time, we're going to see what it might be possible to do in a practical way. So we're ending with program 5 and page 6 to 8, and it is the 4th of July, and we'll begin with program 6, and it'll be the XX of July. Will it be tomorrow? Or will I have to wait longer? We'll begin a new section of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Video Commentary, and page 8 is where we will begin. We have to think, friends, so very carefully to these, in relation to these very carefully given instructions. They are, in my view anyway, unique in the esoteric world. Is it because Master DK is so learned? Partially, but he's such a very good psychologist and so selfless to the degree that whatever else his ashram can produce, it is meant to produce right human relations. So a great treasure is being offered to us, and it really would be the part of wisdom to acknowledge that it is a treasure and will help us fill our own treasury within the causal body. Which is a very long process, but frankly, we are nearing the end. If we are the true aspirant and have taken the first initiation, we're probably 99% of the way towards the goal. And maybe closer still. And all of it, of course, is to increase our usefulness in service. In simply helping each other in the ways we can, and in helping the master and his inspiration reach into the normally darkened world. We'll get better and better at doing that. So Tuya and I and all the communications team of the Moria Federation, University of the Seven Rays, wish you the very best with love and many blessings and encouragement for your studies and for the deepening of your meditation and for finding new and effective ways to serve both individually and through your group or groups. Well, tomorrow's another day. And we'll see if I can go on with this work tomorrow. Sometimes, you know, I have good intentions. I almost had good intentions tonight, which wouldn't have led anywhere. But somehow I said, no, we've got to forge ahead here. And so we've done then program number 5. Okay. See you before long. Bye-bye.